Afghan ousted as captain, the Scots on a Spanish trip, African women's cricket, and the mysterious missing tournament. All that and plenty more coming up in the Emerging Cricket Podcast. Hello and welcome to the Emerging Cricket Podcast, where we dissect the news and events from cricket's new world. Episode 6 today, or as some cringy commentators would call it, episode maximum.
DLF maximum to you, Bez.
Tim Cutler is back on the show and back in the country too, completing his move to Brisbane. Tim, how are you settling in?
I'm present and settled and hard act to follow after you two ran away with it last week very well, so good to be back.
Yeah, well battered from us. And the man that held the fort with me, of course, during Cutler's absence, Nick Skinner, known by many as Copernicus Cricket. Nick, how are you?
Oh, I'm very well, thanks. Good to be back again with Tim Cutler coming in at number three, though.
Yeah, pretty good option at number three.
How's that sandpaper of yours there? Is it still oily, or are we okay now?
Well, I've had to take a few trips to Bunnings to deal with this mess.
Oh, gee, I don't want to continue with the joke between Australians and sandpaper. Let's get straight into the news today, boys. Some breaking news actually coming out of Afghanistan as we record tonight. Askar Afghan has been given the sack as the Afghan captain. It's been announced by the ACB just a few moments ago. We're not too sure what the goings-on are there, but Gulbuddin Naib has been appointed as the one-day international captain for the upcoming Cricket World Cup. Ramit Shah has been given the Test captaincy, and Rashid Khan has been given T20 captaincy, who has captained Afghanistan internationally before. We haven't really had too much time to discuss these boys, even off air before we recorded, but I'll start with you, Tim. That's a real shaken up sort of blow coming into a World Cup. A team that looked pretty well set is now almost in disarray.
Well, yeah, especially we're talking about Askar's batting in India against Ireland and how he was holding that middle to low order together in a MS Dhoni type role, and he has for years and years. So who knows whether this will also affect his place in the team. But yeah, shocking news.
Pretty strange. Yeah, as you were saying, Tim, he was the spine of the batting, really, in a lot of ways. And I mean, the replacements are equally bizarre, really, because, you know, Rashid Khan captained Afghanistan in Askar's absence during the World Cup qualifiers, and he wasn't very good. He struggled with his bowling. It seemed like there was a lot of pressure on him, and as their, I guess, go-to bowler, especially in T20 cricket, there's going to be a lot more pressure on him now with the captaincy, so it seems strange that he would get captaincy of any kind so far. And for the Test side, Hashmat Shahidi, I don't know if he's really a certainty to be in the 11, and somehow he's vice-captain now. Yeah, it's very strange. The other thing, it's instability, isn't it? And that's not what you want going into a World Cup, but... Yeah, I don't know. Afghanistan has had some administrative instability in the past, so perhaps an unfortunate continuation of that.
Just looking at some of the reactions from Afghan fans on the official Afghanistan Cricket Board Twitter account, they posted the news just a few minutes ago. Quite a lot of disappointed and, I guess, angry Afghanistan fans who can't really understand the decision. It is a very unbelievable move. You know, obviously with a tournament and a World Cup at that, so close. If we do get some more news in regards to this, we'll let you know as it comes to hand. We'll move on to, I guess, the plan part of our show for tonight. We didn't exactly have that one locked up, ready to go, considering it just came in. I guess in some more head-scratching news and something that was drawn to our attention by a friend of the show in Bertus de Jong is what we've dubbed the Incredible Disappearing Tournament. Now, it was a tournament scheduled and earmarked in Kenya for various development sides around the associate cricketing world. It was scheduled for March 22. However, teams that were set to be or will supposedly involved in the tournament had no prior knowledge of the event actually going on. It was then postponed. We had various stories from the countries traveling in question in regards to this tournament, hearing different stories. We heard then the tournament then being pushed back due to technical issues. Nick, this is one of the strangest stories in emerging cricket that I've come across in in recent times. Where do you even begin with something like this?
I don't know. As Bertus said, it's a phantom tournament. And the strangest thing is that it was reported as though it was happening in the Nepali media, and Oman announced, I think they either announced a squad or that they definitely gave the impression that they were going. But then, yeah, Tim, when you asked your mates at Hong Kong, no one had even heard of it happening. And then no one hears anything about it. And then suddenly it's postponed due to technical issues. And the announcement said that it would be 2 to 3 weeks postponement, which it's been basically 2 weeks and we've heard nothing. And if it's 3 weeks, then that doesn't really give them much time to have Oman and Hong Kong playing before World Cricket League 2. So, yeah, I don't know, pretty strange stuff happening at Kenya, but perhaps that's not that surprising given their administrative struggles.
Yeah, well, I know Hong Kong is now already either on their way or in Pretoria after a trip to Malaysia beforehand to get some work outside, not getting much time on deck in Hong Kong. So, yeah, look, from the first time that I heard about this, I've got to say I was skeptical, because as soon as you start including full member development sides and you say Zimbabwe A is coming, you know, we know now from prior experience with the Afghanistan series and others touring there that Zimbabwe are happy to host or go places, but they ask for everyone else to pay for them or pay for more than their fair share. So to say that the Zimbabwe A team were coming, like, to me, that for me set off alarm bells saying that I don't think this is legit as perhaps it could be. And yeah, I think it just confirmed it when talking to Hong Kong, which I'm sure would have been keen for affordable cricket leading up to World Cricket League 2, even if it was T20 cricket. Hadn't heard of it. Yeah. Well, I don't know. Someone started a good story and it's picked up storm. Just, yeah, interesting.
It's a shame, though, because it was shaping up to be a pretty good tournament. You know, Kenya, Oman, Nepal, Hong Kong, Zimbabwe, rumours, but I mean, the whole tournament was rumours, but rumours that India and Pakistan might be sending development sides, although potentially the ongoing political tension scuppered that idea. But yeah, so I was pretty keen for it.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure. Give me a bit of paper and a pencil and I can come up with a pretty interesting tournament too. But if nobody knows about it and never exists, then I guess it's going to be filed away with this one as well.
Yeah, I was always told if something sounds too good to be true, it normally is. This tournament kind of fits that measure. There's just, you know, so many teams, well, I say set to go out there, but were penciled in as you put Tim, and again it just looked too good to be true to be anything real or anything tangible.
if a wicket falls in a cricket stadium but no one sees it, did it actually fall?
The story of United Arab Emirates cricket.
Well, an event in Africa that has actually happened, Namibia women hosting Botswana. Good preparation series ahead of the ICC women's qualifiers in May, which is hosted in Zimbabwe. They have planned to make this a yearly bilateral series, which is important given that the countries are geographically close to each other and it's a good chance to test out each other as well. Just going through some of the results of the tournament, the first two matches were actually abandoned without a ball being bowled due to some inclement weather in Windhoek. But apart from that, Namibia did run out 5-0 winners in pretty convincing fashion. Nick, I know that you had the magnifying glass out on this tournament and focused on it a little bit more than we did. What did you see?
I think Namibia looked very strong from what we could gather with the results and the numbers. Botswana, yeah, they've still got a bit of ground to make up in the women's game. The men's team, as we saw last year, sprang an upset and qualified ahead of Namibia in the Africa T20 sub-regional qualifiers. But yeah, in a lot of these countries, the women's game isn't quite as developed as the men's game is a lot of the time. So they did struggle. They didn't get past 76 in any of the matches. Namibia scored 160 plus each time they batted first. It's pretty one-sided stuff. It is a nice initiative for them to be doing this, though. As you're saying, Bez, it's good that countries, near to each other can get some regular practice in, especially since the ICC perhaps are not running quite as many tournaments as we might like. Tim, I know, has some experience with that, actually, at Hong Kong with the East Asia Pacific Trophy.
Yeah, I think, you know, as you say, there's not as many tournaments happening. But there's also, I guess, our issue was it was sort of across regions as well by encompassing East Asia Pacific, by bringing Korea and Japan into it as well. But, yeah, there's no reason why, hopefully, with the relatively cheap travel between the nations that some of those sub-Saharan African nations can look to do something similar. But I guess you sort of look at that and think with the load of T20 events and whether we have regional and sub-regional qualifiers again for 2021 or not, and the women's events coming every 2 years as well, there's going to be a bit of cricket being played. But, yeah, it'd be good to see them getting even more international cricket on the side, especially now that we have T20I status for everyone.
Yeah, and that's going to be more important going forward once once the ranking system manages to gets rolled out. One thing I did notice was that two of the top three wicket takers, well, the top three wicket takers were all Namibian. They did dominate, but the numbers two and three, Evelyn Kedjerekua and Sylvia Shihepo, were both young ladies are Indigenous African, which is important for Namibia because they have struggled in the past to get cricket breaking into the black majority population. They haven't, as far as I know, gone the South African route of quotas, but it's definitely an area of concern for the administrators. So hopefully this means there's some good, I guess, Indigenous African talent coming through or can be inspired. It reminded me a bit of in the under-19 boys African qualifiers, the leading wicket taker overall actually was a Namibian fella called Mauritius Ngapeta, which again, hopefully is some African talent coming through because, I mean, Namibia is a pretty small country to begin with. I think about 2.5 million population. So if you're only picking from, you know, less than 10% of the population, your talent pool is going to be pretty limited. So yeah, let's hope they can try and expand the game.
Yeah, Namibia do struggle. They've got a really disparate spread out population. You know, they've got population density the same as Australia. So you imagine with the amount of money there to go around to fund cricket development, you can imagine that there's not a lot of work being done. So you can hope that they're starting to expand that into townships and some more regional centres. But no, it's really, really encouraging news.
Yeah, and I guess it's another reminder of why the women's game is, or developing the women's game is so important. And it's sort of a fresh market in a way, in that you get better cut through with perhaps locals whose sports tastes aren't as maybe set in their ways. Because I know in your time with Hong Kong, you had a lot more success getting the local Chinese ladies into the game than perhaps the men.
Yeah, and we've spoken about this at length before, the power of sport, of empowering girls around the world and getting them to bind together and really following pursuits like cricket and other team sports. So it just seems to – I'm not sure. We're not sociologists here, but to see why the cricket seems to grow so much better within across the females, girls and women in these developing cricket nations more so than the men, whether it just means there aren't that many other options for girls to play and that the cricket presents one of few options or there's other reasons. But I would be intrigued to learn more about why it is.
Yeah, well, speaking of the girls, both the teams actually were quite young, which seems to be a common theme across women's cricket, which is, yeah, it's encouraging that they are getting the game in with the younger demographic as well, because that shows that there's a lot of room for growth. 16-year-old Adri Vandermeerwe was one of the top run scorers, and she actually batted really well against Zimbabwe in January when they had a bilateral series against them in Windhoek as well, which Zimbabwe did win 5-0. So I guess getting back to the on-field performance, I think this series against Botswana is a good tune-up for the Namibians, but they're going to have to improve again because they've struggled against the stronger associate teams and Zimbabwe in Africa in the past. Yeah, they had a lot of trouble at the Women's World T20 qualifier last time, and they'll need to keep improving.
Well, I did take a couple of sociology classes at university during my time there, so I might have to go back into my textbooks and perhaps have a look as to why cricket grows so well in female communities where sport is sort of just infiltrating different markets, and cricket is a quality example. That's actually quite fascinating too, because not only is this series going on in Namibia, but there's also the Women's Victoria Tri-Series, Uganda hosting Kenya and Zimbabwe. As I said, also prep for the Women's Qualifier, which should be a good tournament, and I believe is being streamed on YouTube. Nick, I think you were telling us about that.
Yes. So the Ugandan The Ugandan administration's actually look like they're doing some good stuff there, because they've streamed their domestic T20 competition as well in the past. So it's always nice to be able to watch the game and get some exposure for it. Which I have to say, Namibia dropped the ball a bit with that. I sent them their Facebook page a message asking for a bit more information about the tournament and, you know, what's going on with it. And their their response was, quote, "Hi, the matches are on Crick Info," end quote, which honestly is not good enough.
Yeah.
You know, if you're running this tournament, you know, you want people to see it. You want people to find out about it. And so just, you know, palming me off to a scorecard on Crick Info is...
It doesn't tell the whole story.
Pretty disappointing.
Do you think this person works in the same office that they're trying to issue visas for people travelling there for cricket tournaments?
Oh, now.
Oh, do we want to open Pandora's box?
Oh, God. Don't get me started.
Analogy is fine. I was going to say there's a box of cans of worms over here. Should I just leave it shut or what?
Yeah, well, there's an entire shipping container of cans of worms,
and it's in line at a Namibian consulate
somewhere. Apparently, there's one in Sydney,
In many other places in Australia, also Sydney.
I reckon I would have had better luck banging my head against the brick wall of the Namibian consulate to get a visa than anything else. Just a show of desperation. Help.
Shout out to our good friends in Namibia. We'll be seeing you soon.
Yeah. We should probably tread a little bit lightly here, boys.
Well, yeah. Okay. Getting back to the action on the field. The Victoria Tri-Series looks like it'll be pretty exciting. Uganda and Zimbabwe have been pretty close recently. Their women's team, the Lady Cricket Cranes, managed to defeat Zimbabwe to win the Women's World T20 Africa qualifier and, yeah, win through to the global qualifier. Both teams were well ahead of the competition in that tournament. It'll be an exciting matchup. Kenya have struggled a bit recently, though, especially in women's cricket.
You're not wrong. The Kenyan slide has continued, and we saw that also in the men's under-19 World Cup qualifying as well. I actually read a bit up on the Kenyan women's team in this tournament, and they, for a long time there, looked like they might not have been competing in it at all. I think it was only yesterday where they actually confirmed that they will sort of honour the call of competing in the Tri-Series because there were just fears that the country would miss out after the ICC suspended their grants over leadership wrangles and other sort of things. But the officials of Cricket Kenya came out and convinced the host to allow them to compete. And I think they're only paying their sort of prices of the competition afterwards, so that's something that can be, I guess, scrutinized at a later date. But again, it just shows that the Kenyan cricket is in a very, very difficult situation at the moment. We've seen Nigeria and Uganda usurp them in that part of the world. Uganda over the last couple of years, and now Nigeria emerging as a threat in both men's and women's cricket. So I don't really know how it's going to turn around in Kenya, and I want to be optimistic about all of it, but at the same time, it's just growing sort of more grim the more stories that we hear come out of Kenya.
Yeah, unfortunately, Kenya and administrative problems have been a recurring theme for a long time now. And just on that, I guess, issue of the team not quite making it to the tournament or nearly not making it to the tournament, the men's team almost didn't make it to the World Cricket League Division 3 tournament. And I believe they only got on the plane because former chairwoman Jackie Jan Muhammad offered to front up their wages for them because the board was not paying them. So it just goes to show the administrative problems run very deep. And like you say, Bez, I don't see how they can get out of it without some pretty drastic changes. Perhaps the ICC needs to intervene because I think they have been on the edge of suspension and perhaps expulsion for a little while now. So, and you know, as we've seen with the US administration seeming to turn things around once the the laughing stock of USACA was expelled. Perhaps, you know, if the ICC just entirely cleans them out, and I don't know, yeah, maybe that'll help. But then maybe not. So who knows.
Yeah, well, hopefully Kenya do shake out all those issues and compete at a high level in the Triad Nations tournament there. Of course, this is good exposure for them before the Women's T20 World Cup qualifiers, which are doubling up as qualifiers for the 50-over World Cup as well, just like the ones that were held in Asia a few weeks ago. And that's to be played in Zimbabwe from May 3 to 13. The teams playing in that, obviously Kenya, Uganda and Zimbabwe, who we did mention, also Mozambique, Namibia, Nigeria, Rwanda, Sierra Leone and Tanzania. And they will all play in Harare, as I said, from May 3 to 13. Let's move north now to mainland Europe. And Spain hosted a T20 International Men's Tri Series tournament played at La Manga. Between themselves, Malta and an Estonian 11. Spain did go undefeated. The Estonian matches had no T20 international status as Estonia were not classed as an official national side. They had issues of eligible players playing in the Tri-Series. Spain, as I said, comfortably winning that tournament. Nick, you did look at this with a little bit more detail than the pair of us. Did look as though Spain had this in relative control.
Yeah, they were definitely the stronger side there. Just on the Estonia thing, the issue was that they couldn't actually field an 11 of fully eligible players, which, considering the eligibility criteria, are pretty lax. Just goes to show, I guess, the game's pretty young there. I guess they're just starting out on their cricket journey, but it's nice that that these little tournaments are being organised, because it definitely gives the respective nations some good match practice, and it's great that they're official 2020 internationals. Of course, it'll be interesting to see how many of the Spanish players turn up in the European Cricket League, because the Spanish domestic champions Catalonia are playing in that. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they go.
Now, what is this I hear about a professional poker player also moonlighting as a cricketer for Estonia?
I don't know how much of this that we want to include, but the captain of the Estonian cricket team is a man by the name of Tim Heath, who is not only the captain of Estonia, he's also a professional poker player, according to his Wikipedia page. It's very uncommon for a international cricketer in Eastern Europe, and for Estonia at that, to have their own Wikipedia page.
Self-edited Wikipedia page, we're guessing.
Well, there's conjecture, because I did have a look at it today while we did, did our research for today's show. And on top of the Wikipedia page, there is a message from those running the website saying that this article doesn't meet specific criterion for an actual article to exist due to the levels of poker and cricket that Tim Heath is playing at. So I don't want to vilify the poor bloke. I'm friends with him on Facebook and everything.
So he does exist. Okay, well, that's a plus. I'm just thinking of Spain. I used to play with one of the Spanish players, Pedro Venus, at Gravesend in the UK. He used to fly back to play for Spain. But there you go. I saw Always Ahmed. One innings, 102, not out of 64 against Malta. That was a bit of an innings. I didn't watch too much else. Nicholas, were you following this ball by ball?
Didn't get the chance to, but it's good that it's I guess it seems like the decision to extend T20 international status has prompted a lot of these countries to get on board and start organising some tournaments between themselves, which is really good, and I guess probably what the ICC was hoping for when they made that decision.
And speaking of that, I did see a very, very good friend of the podcast, Mr. Andrew Nixon, quote tweet Will Glenn Wright's missive to the same degree of him saying how good it was that to see all these countries playing T20Is on the back of it, pointing out that, well, that's great, but he believes that the ICC could be doing more to advertise them and actually market them across their channels, and also to help more with the scoring and stats side of things, which I find it hard to disagree with. To see how much that the ICC puts towards IPL and other tournaments that probably don't need as much marketing.
Or April Fool joke content.
Yeah, and that was large and considered. But you'd like to think that with all these events being invested in ultimately by the members themselves, or members and non-members, I guess we're also seeing non-members playing, especially in the Central American Championships and whatnot. That like to see that they're you know, I think what the ICC has 8 million plus now on Twitter alone. You think to harness that to get the exposure there for those emerging nations. I know it's a, perhaps an echo chamber there in terms of already having cricket fans there. But, I know the ICC development team have as much on their plate at the moment anyway, but hopefully they can cross over with their colleagues and the digital team to work with these. And that's getting some content from those matches too, be it streaming or good quality clips.
Yeah, I think we're all singing from the same hymn book on this one, Tim. It is disappointing when the ICC's promoting full member games that are already being watched by millions of people when the lower ranked teams could do with a lot more exposure. And I remember when I was in Dasmariñas in the Philippines for the sub-regional qualifier there, you know, they were sharing updates about the T10 league, but barely a mention of the, you know, hard-fought cricket with, you know, lots of important context. And yeah, they barely talked about that. So, that was disappointing. Just on the stats thing, I think you're right. This is going to be a bit of a problem for them in future, in that on one level, we still don't know what the comprehensive international rankings is going to look like. I was assured by the ICC people I spoke to in Dasmariñas that all the matches will feed into it somehow, but yeah, I don't know what that's going to look like. And in terms of scoring and, you know, keeping track of stats, is the ICC keeping a central database with all the information and then using that, or are they kind of outsourcing it to Crickinfo, which seems a bit risky, or you know, what's going on with that? No one's really come out and explained that situation. So yeah, hopefully they can sort that all out, because at the moment it's all pretty piecemeal, which is not ideal really if you're trying to follow these games.
It has the potential to be a real mess, especially if you want to backdate and go and find statistics from World Cricket League matches going back a number of years now. And it's very hard to quantify a player's sort of role in their respective teams when you look back. You only can kind of make out from scorecards in specific years how certain players have done. And I think if we want to get serious about keeping track of statistics from associate cricket and upwards, it would actually benefit everyone involved. It would benefit the teams playing to analyse their own performances over a number of years. It would help opposition's blueprint their strategies in terms of defeating opposing sides. It would help broadcasters aid their coverage. I think it would just be obviously beneficial moving forward. It just depends on how they go about it. As you said, do they outsource it to someone like Crickinfo, which, okay, for all of Crickinfo's positives, we do sometimes, I guess, bemoan the way that Crickinfo is kind of set out and how difficult at times it can be to find specific information, how the app works, how the website works and stuff like that. So I think there's so many things that need to be ironed out for something that is as objective as numbers and stats. It needs a bit of a rethink and a rebuild to get where it should be. Just going back to Catalonia and Spain, I have found the Catalunya squad for the European Cricket League. It was wedged in with all the other social media posts from the European Cricket League, who have been very active across the last few months trying to promote their competition, and for good reason. It looks to be a pretty good product. Yasir Ali, who batted number 3 for Spain in this particular tournament, he also is in the Catalunya Cricket Club squad. So we will see plenty of him. And he did perform quite well over the Tri-Series tournament. He made a 57 off 40 deliveries against Malta, which included 5 fours and 3 sixes. So he could be a player to look out for, to be, I guess, a key to Catalunya's campaign at the European Cricket League, which is quickly approaching. It'll be, before we sort of know it, given all the associate and emerging cricket that is happening over the course of 2019. Spain was also the host for Scotland, who did send both their men's and women's teams to a training camp there in La Manga. Once again, another seal of approval by an international team with the La Manga facility. As I said, a combined men's and women's camp, it's something that we haven't really seen before, but it has looked to be a huge success. Nick, did you see much of that, and what was your assessment of that?
Yeah, I thought it was really nice that they had the two squads together and seemed like it worked out really well for them. And I think that's something going forward that perhaps other teams could or should start looking at doing, because it's you know, they are both, you know, representing Scotland and they're the national team. So it's good, I think, if they can support each other. And just thinking of the women's AFL comp that's recently concluded in Australia, and I was reading an interview with one of the players in the final, and she was saying that, you know, the men's team was supporting them all throughout the week, and, you know, they were training and all that sort of stuff. And so I think it is good to, yeah, have them together and I guess show that they're equally valued as teams.
It also helps, I guess, if you've got some crossover with the coaching staff, as inevitably happens in even the larger associates. So yeah, look, it's a probably a practical measure, but also, as you said, it's good to see both teams representing a full age of their countries.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, actually, Tim. I think there's potentially a lot to be gained from that, in that because they would both have their own training systems and, you know, coaching staff, and perhaps getting a, you know, another set of eyes looking at each other's systems would be beneficial to both.
And who doesn't want to be taught how to hit the ball hard by George Munsey?
I don't know. Does he train, or does he just sit on Instagram of his golf swing while he's on tour? And I hope he's listening, and love out to Henry George. Well, he was a former professional golfer, wasn't he? So he does play like it's like we would all hit a golf ball like cricketers.
The cricketer's curse.
I.e., you know, fading heavy, and he definitely hits a cricket ball like a golfer. But I'll tell you what, he's just got better and better. And between him and Callum and everyone else coming through, that team's looking stronger and stronger.
Yes, an unpopular opinion perhaps, but I sort of it's almost a shame that the Netherlands are in that ODI league and not Scotland, because I think Scotland, if we're being honest, would have given the full member teams a lot more of a run for their money.
Well, yeah, considering they're only going to play 8 rounds anyway, aren't they, each over 2 years, then if you had, and I know it doesn't work out perfectly, but if you had two groups of 8 over those 2 years feeding into a qualification pathway, likewise with the challenge leagues below, that would have worked out quite nicely, wouldn't it? But, you know, at their best, the Netherlands, Scotland, yeah, UAE have got more consistent over time. But yes, after Scotland beat the team ranked 1 at the time to take out the, well, to hold the belt for the world champion of cricket, if we look at the alternative ranking system in place, that I think who uses that? I think that's a Jeff Lemon or maybe a Jared Kimber thing, that, you know, it's who beats the champion.
The unofficial world champion.
Yeah. And so that was held by Oman for a bit, but went back to Scotland. So Scotland's holding it at the moment. And I think they've just been peaking almost at the wrong time, really. If this peak had happened more mid WCLC, but of course they had the weather issues as well, with what, 5 games rained off out of the entire event as well. So, but yeah, look, I don't think you get too many people that would disagree with it in terms of performance levels at the moment. But I guess that's the beauty of the World Cricket League Championship, wasn't it? It all came down to whoever won that, and it wasn't necessarily the team that was building best.
Yeah, and that said, I think it's a fantastic reward for all the hard work of, as I'm sure we've mentioned before on the show, but, you know, Pete Borren and Ryan Campbell, you know, all the guys there in the Dutch setup, they've all worked really hard, and this is a fantastic reward for them. So it's impossible to begrudge them their participation.
No, absolutely, there's no begrudging. It's well, you look at it as well. If Hong Kong had chased down that target in game 1 against the Netherlands in February 2017, and everything else had continued as it did, you know, we'd be talking about Hong Kong going into the world, well, into the ODI league, and how are they going to cope with that? So, you know, it really did sort of really turn on a, well, it was on a knife edge really by the end there. It was just one result could have turned everything. Welcome to associate cricket.
Well, yeah, as everyone always, the cliche, you know, cutthroat, and it really is.
Yeah, well, again, thinking of Scotland and not having the rub of the green over the course of that World Cup qualifier and a few other things that didn't go their way, it goes to show that, yeah, it could easily have been Scotland in the Dutch's spot. But in saying that, the Dutch have shown a little bit of depth over the last few months in the tours that they've been on, where they've picked, you know, 17, 18 players, and Ryan Campbell has been doing a good job there as well. Speaking of coaches, Shane Berger is coaching Scotland now, and he's just finished that Lumunga camp, was his first camp as national coach. So it looks like they've got themselves ready to go moving forward under him, which will be quite enjoyable to see.
Yeah, it's good that, it looks like he's settling into his role, and that'll be good for Scotland's stability, having a permanent coach in the role after Toby Bailey did a good job as interim coach once Grant Bradburn left. So, yeah, good signs for them, and hopefully they can keep building, as you were saying.
Yeah, I think this is a critical juncture for Scotland. And again, associate cricket, you know, it's so many critical junctures and events and whatnot. But just to see how Grant really turned that squad, or didn't really turn it around, but how he built such a resilient squad that became a lot more consistent, and everything you read about the effect that he had on the players, both individually and as a unit, how much positive change he brought in, the mindset that he developed. I just really hope for Scotland's sake that the Shane can just take that to other heights. So I just think it's such a big point here is they push for full membership and to really ram their home if they can keep continuing this. But like I said, very important time.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, Tim. I think with this current crop of players that they've got, they have a fantastic opportunity to really, really push hard for full membership. And that's perhaps why it was a bit of a shame they missed out on the ODI League, because I think that would have been a perfect platform for them to really press their case.
Well, ODI League or World Cup, I don't think we need to labour the point of how they'll be feeling about missing both. Each by margins that have been discussed.
Yes, by the rain.
By rain and fingers.
Yes.
Or lack thereof, as the case may be.
Mm. Yeah, and your point about the mindset, I think, is an important one as well, because that's one of the things that perhaps associate teams sometimes struggle with is I guess being in the mindset of a professional team, rather than, you know, they're not all being paid as much as they'd like, or, you know, some of them have to quit to get a job like Preston Momsen, because the money's not quite there. But just having that mindset of being a full-time professional team really can turn things around, because, you know, the squad they've got, the personnel isn't too much different from, you know, a couple of years ago, but the results and I guess just the way they look as a unit is a lot more convincing now than it was, you know, 18, 24 months ago.
Yeah, well, good to see Scotland taking an initiative and trying to get out of the inclement conditions of Scotland. In saying that, it did also rain in Lumunga as well, and they were forced to train indoors.
It just follows them everywhere, doesn't it?
Yeah, so speaking of indoors, we looked at a little bit of indoor cricket this week, boys. The New Zealand Asia Indoor Championships started this week and featured a number of, I guess, emerging cricketing nations flexing their muscles on the indoor cricket court. The event is being live streamed on the Singapore Cricket Association's Facebook page. New Zealand, Sri Lanka, India, all there. UAE, India, I believe Singapore have entered two teams. Nick, you've watched a little bit of this tournament so far. How has it been?
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. I like indoor cricket. I played it a little bit. I have some relatives up in Townsville, and indoor is actually arguably the primary format of the game that they play up there, just because of the, as we were talking about, the weather, you know, and in summer in Townsville, rains a hell of a lot. So, I think indoor cricket's really interesting. It's a slightly different format of the game, but yeah, it's a lot of fun. So it's a nice initiative that Singapore are streaming it on their Facebook page. I did notice that UAE sprung an upset on India, which was nice. But yeah, and New Zealand, Sri Lanka and India are all leading the proceedings on the points table.
I've got to say, between Singapore and Malaysia, I'm seeing more and more of their matches being streamed, which is really positive. You know, there's a lot of potential partners out there that do scoring and analysis, but also offer streaming as well. But almost every other day, I think at the moment, so something's popping up from Singapore or Malaysia. So hats off to them.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those, I guess, chicken and egg situations, you know, where, there's no market for it. But if there's no market for it, they don't show it. But then no one can watch it, so there's no market for it. So it's good to see them being proactive and trying to get some more viewers for their product.
Yeah, well, you have to start somewhere, don't you? I mean, if people don't know that a tournament is being played out, how can anyone follow it? It's like what you said before, if a wicket falls and no one is there to see it, did a wicket really fall? Because, you know, with a chicken and egg situation there, if no one knows that anything's going down, how can anyone, you know, then immerse themselves and follow it? It's like what, I mean, scorecards do give you a lot, you know, normally, but they really don't tell you the whole story. And for us as emerging cricket fans and a lot of emerging cricket fans out there who do bemoan the lack of being able to actually watch the product, it's good to see that this is happening. Even for indoor cricket is a great sport in terms of streaming because it's actually quite easy. You probably only need a camera at each end, if that. I do remember actually on Australian National TV going back 10 or 15 years ago, they used to show indoor cricket on, it might have been on the ABC. It was actually quite good to watch from memory.
Yeah. Yeah, I do have a memory of that being on TV when I was a kid.
Yeah, I was going to say it was definitely an ABC thing. It was always, it must have been one of those ones that they didn't get any interest from the commercial networks and ABC came in. But yeah, that was really entertaining. It's just the speed of the game. It's almost like the difference between watching field hockey and ice hockey, you know, sort of watch, you know, indoor cricket and the balls ricocheting around, which, you know, you're not used to watching, are you? You know, it's quite a linear thing. The ball goes out and maybe is caught and thrown back. But with all the deflections and things going everywhere, it's quite entertaining and you're never bored watching it, that's for sure.
Have you played any indoor cricket, guys?
Yeah, just casually. I think it was a couple of, because they play it during winter, don't they? So you'd finish in the season and yeah. You know, I played a couple of seasons, I think, but I wasn't sure how good it was for my game there because you're just sort of nudging and sort of trying to hit it to the ground, don't you, and bounce it rather than sort of free-flowing shots.
Yeah, I haven't really played it competitively. And yeah, I kind of had the same sort of idea as Tim. And I remember when I was looking at potentially playing it myself, my dad, who actually played quite a little bit of indoor cricket, he said, nah, it's probably not the most beneficial thing to do for your outdoor game. But in saying that, I have heard stories of the reverse where players have actually come from indoor cricket or from an indoor cricket background and actually performed quite well in the outdoor form of the game. So maybe and perhaps with the influx of shorter format cricket, that mindset might be changing because batting is, I guess, a different art now than it was, say, 30 or 40 years ago in the outdoor sense anyway.
Yeah, and I think from my experience playing it, the nudging quick singles aspect, that's something that you really get pretty good at playing indoor cricket. So I think that's something that has definitely come back into fashion in the shorter formats because being able to rotate the strike is very important, as well as power hitting. And just one other thing I guess that I would quickly mention is that I know Iceland largely play indoors because of the weather there. And so I think indoor cricket is potentially a pretty interesting tool for promoting the game in certain climates. I know from my time in Denmark as well, people, you know, in winter, they call it winter depression. And basically because the sun sets, you know, so early and gets up so late, everyone's kind of a bit miserable. And so they're always looking for new hobbies or new ways to alleviate that. So I think cricket could be pretty smart about, you know, marketing itself with indoor as a perhaps a cure to winter depression or, you know, somewhere with the, you know, pretty miserable weather.
Yeah, that's a great point that you make there, Nick, as we sort of wrap up today. Indoor cricket, or at least the variations of the sport indoors, could be a great vehicle in developing the sport where climates might not be as conducive. Definitely something that at least the innovative and the forward-thinking bodies may think about down the track. Boys, we're going to have to end today's show there. Thank you for joining me for episode 6 of the Emerging Cricket Podcast. To keep up with news from Cricket's New World, make sure to follow Emerging Cricket on your favourite social media platform and make sure to give us a positive rating where you are listening to all your podcasts. For now, from me and from the other boys here at Emerging Cricket, enjoy the rest of your day wherever you are around the cricketing world.